Well, welcome. Let's see how many callers we have here. Well, we've got 437 people on. That's a little bit lighter than I thought, but you know, that's what happens, you know, because we're recording this and we're getting that recording up on the website. You know, we don't get our usual 900 to 1100 or so. We're getting a lot less these days, and that I think that's good. That means people are taking their time and reading these things, or watching these things, listening to these things as time goes on. One of the things that I wanted to talk to you all about, and I am going to take a few questions here. I would love to have some questions on some things that are edifying to everybody. That would be great. I sure would appreciate it. The ministry is, you know, we've had a good year so far. We are more than halfway through our year. As a matter of fact, June, July, August, September, we're 4 months away from the end of our year. So looking at things through the end of the year, we've done okay. We're having a horrible May, but I'm not sure why that is. But whatever it is, it is. Maybe because we are focused on preborn ministries, which is far more important than anything I'm doing. But of course, I want to stay on the air. But that's you know, God will follow God's will on all of that. But nonetheless, things are going good. We are in the process of redoing our studio and moving to another studio. We did not have any success in buying a building, so we kind of gave up on that idea. We'll set that money aside for another day, what little we have saved. But nonetheless, not a just didn't work. I just couldn't do it from a stewardship perspective. Everything here is so expensive. We have this vision of moving the ministry south a little bit or somewhere less expensive, and that may happen yet. So we're moving to another building because we need the size. We are expanding. We need more studio space more than anything for various different sets that we're doing for other programming. So we've got to have that done. And so we're going to move. We've got another lease situation for 3 years. We got a really, really good price. God just dropped it in our lap, so I really felt good about that. But that's where we are. That's going to be an interesting summer for us, because when we make the switch over, it may not be until October, but it'll be interesting to see how we do that. But things are good. We continue to be blessed, and God continues to raise up opportunities for us. I will say this to you. And there's a lot of people, some of you may be listening, some of you may partner with us. And I don't say this on the air because I really not wouldn't be fair for the network. But NRB TV, we are dropping NRB TV. We prayed about this for months and months. It's been a very tough decision. But it's been expensive to be on NRB TV. And we just don't feel as though it is good stewardship of our money. We don't have an awful lot of viewers from what we can tell. It's always hard to tell because we don't have any way of gauging other than people that are partnering with the ministry. And so we audit all of our stations, including our TV stations, on a regular basis. And we have to go off NRB. We just can't do it. They were very disappointed, great people. They worked really hard to try to keep us, and we're just unable to do it. And as you know, as with all non-com broadcasting, TV or radio, non-commercial broadcasting, you got to pay. I mean, that's their ministry. That's how they stay in business. So we just didn't feel that it was a good use of God's money. So we have to go off starting Monday. Actually, I think Friday will be our last program. So if you watch on NRB TV, there's plenty of other ways to watch us. Try Biz Television. They may be on in your area. They are a good network. They're very big. They're around everywhere. Dove Television, CTN, maybe some opportunities there to see the program. Of course, our YouTube channel and all these other TV outlets, Roku and Amazon and Apple and all those things. But we apologize and we hate to do it because we know there are some people that are going to be disappointed, and that's always a hard decision to make. But, you know, it's, and it is important that when you call in, you know, or you write in, especially, let the station know that you're listening. Tell them that you appreciate the show. That's really important. That keeps them keeping us on the air. And I have to tell you, it's been 10 years since we've had a station want to see us go off the air for one reason or another. It's usually because a board member complained that we were too political. But it hasn't happened in a very long time. It's usually our decision. But you need to call the station and let them know. And maybe they'll help us. Usually the decision is in reference to money and things like that. So we have some great networks that don't charge us, that want the programming, and we are grateful for that. So Dove Television and others. So I hope you support those ministries. Okay. So here's what I think. I think the markets are beginning to come around a little bit, and I'm pretty excited about it, frankly. I'm hoping that there's still some geopolitical events, and I'm not ready to make a call on taking profits anymore. I told you that taking profits was a temporary strategy. It was not a permanent strategy. It was something that we were going to adopt. I had done it four or five other times over the last 35 years. We're doing it again now. I think we continue to do that until we see how things shake out. My original plan was that we were going to be in this profit-taking mode at least until the end of the year, and it may be sooner that we kind of get away from that. So I will let you know by way of an alert, probably have another conference call, special conference call, to review that with you and let you know why we're doing that. But right now, we're still doing it. We're still taking the profits. But speaking of taking the profits, I just did want to say to you, there seems to be some momentum and enthusiasm coming back into the markets, and that's very good. One of the things that I wanted to talk about is oil. And, you know, there were 10 stocks that a lot of the analysts put out there, including myself, that were had very little bit of debt. These were oil stocks, energy stocks, that had very little debt, that really were reinventing themselves, that were very strong companies. And at the time, six of them were on my buy list. Well, there's only six total out of that 10 that could even be on my broad list. Six of them were on my buy list. Today, there's still three on my buy list. And at some point in time since January 1st or late last year, they've been on my buy list. And all of them are up considerably, some of them up as much as 64%. So we have seen some great recovery in the oil sector, and I hope that all of you hung in there and stayed with us as I was begging people not to sell. A lot of you have taken some profits. That's fine. But what I would say to you is that it is my opinion right now that the energy stocks will hold for a little bit longer. I think they are headed higher. I said to you on a conference call back in February that, look, these energy stocks are so undervalued. They are at the same prices when oil was down to $25 or so a barrel. The valuations are incredible. And you remember, if you were on that call, you remember me saying something's got to give. Well, it has given. So that was one of those by the grace of God moments that we were right about that. And things are giving. And we're seeing that. And we're starting to see these energy stocks really do well. Of course, oil is going to continue to rise. And I don't think oil is going to settle in, even when things get a little bit more balanced, a whole lot lower than where they are. I would like to see them hover around $62 a barrel, give or take. That would be an ideal situation, be ideal for gas prices. It'd be ideal for energy stocks as well. But we'll have to wait and see. I don't think that's going to happen anytime this year. So I believe that energy stocks are still going to head higher or hold at least where they are. There seems to be a bit of a divergence between some really, really good corporate sentiment about the opportunities in energy equities and this idea that some suggest that the rally is fizzling out or going away or it's almost over. And I believe that there are a lot of reasons why oil is going to continue to move higher in the kind of, I don't want to say short term, but in the medium term, you know, in the next year or two. I think they're going to continue to move higher. I feel really good about the energy stocks. One is demand. Demand is way off the charts compared to what I thought they would be. I got to tell you, I did not in any, by any stretch of the imagination, think that energy stocks were going to be anywhere near where they were. Gasoline prices were going to be anywhere near you know, where they are. So I'm very surprised. I'm very surprised by that. So we have incredible strong gasoline consumption through the roof. Now, some of you will remember me whining 3-4 years ago about distilled products. And I was then begging that Congress would not approve the exporting of crude oil. Well, I lost, and of course they did, and I was one of the few Republicans, few conservatives that was in that camp, especially the supply-side economic guy that I am. I was in that camp by myself. I believed exporting oil was exporting jobs, and I didn't want to see that happen. Doesn't matter. We're exporting oil. My thing was we should be exporting distilled products. All the jobs stay here. Let's export the final product, make a smaller carbon footprint because we refine much cleaner than anywhere else in the world, and export the distilled products. Well, I lost that. Didn't happen. But now we are starting to see demand for gasoline being so strong that we have stepped up dramatically our exporting of at least gasoline, and I suspect we'll be exporting other distilled products as well within the next 2 years. So that is going to continue to drive oil production here in America. And I think we're going to continue to see very strong demand. What could stop that? Tariffs? Different election? You know, all we need is an election change. You know, if Democrats pick up the House or the Senate and in 2020 pick up the presidency, all this is over. And I mean that. All of it's over. You need to understand that anybody elected on that platform is not going to maintain this mentality that this president has of corporations are good, profits are not to be demonized, they're a good thing, they help the American economy, that higher wages are good. All of these things that we are seeing beginning to happen are going to be over with. So that is a geopolitical event here in America that could change everything. So just so you know, if you don't think it's important that you get out and vote in the primary elections and in this election in November, man, you couldn't be wrong, more wrong. We've got 24 seats that we've got to hang on to in the Congress. And of course, I think we're going to pick up a couple seats in the Senate. So we should be okay as long as we don't lose any at the same time. And I don't think we will. So we'll be okay that way. Then we can start worrying about the 2020 elections. Strong demand. OPEC supply is changing. So we're seeing OPEC cutting daily production by about 1.2 million barrels a day in 2016 and have stayed on that course. Saudi Arabia, the main producer there, is dead set on trying to get to $80 a barrel. And they also believe, which I believe as well, that their oil revenue is going to fund domestic programs and help maintain peace in the Middle East and in the Arab world. And they're right about that. There's no doubt about it. So Saudi Arabia gets about $3.1 billion a year of revenue that they use, obviously, to fund their government projects. And I think we're starting to see them change their supply disciplines a little bit. That is very, very good. Geopolitical risk. Listen, we've been talking about this for years. Geopolitical risks are certainly putting some tensions between Saudi Arabia, Israel, Iran, Syria, and other places. And these risks could, not will, but could drive up oil supply and lower prices. That's going to impact stocks. I don't think that is likely to happen. Rebel groups already have struck some oil tankers in the Middle East. And, you know, we're not hearing much about it, but that's already happened this year. And, look, I don't know that that's totally over with yet, but there are always going to be geopolitical risks. We have political tensions in Libya, in Nigeria, Venezuela, big time. That's spiraling out of control. All of that is going to impact production falling at the very same time that demand continues to rise. So oil prices, and I'm talking about stock prices now, are going to stay probably fairly elevated, and I think there is upside potential to run. Remember, when you look at a Marathon Oil, you say, oh my word, how much more can it go? It's up, you know, 25% or whatever it's up right now. It's up 25%, and you're looking at it, you're saying, you know, I got to get out because the odds of this going any higher are slim to none. It's just not going to go any higher. Look, we've got to consider, it's like wages going up. We haven't had wage rate increase in 16 years. And so wages are going to go up. Wages are going to continue to go up. And because we've got ground to make up, the same thing is true in oil prices. So when we look at a Marathon Oil, and there is no, I mean, Valero is the only one that we could possibly have some concern about that, wow, this thing is at the top. Let's not even, you know, think that it's going to go a whole lot higher. Yet it continues to rise. Because, and I think it will be because of the pressure being put on refineries. But, you know, we look at Marathon, okay, it's up 30% on the year, but we've got to look at the 5 year. So Marathon sitting at 21.91. 3 years ago, 3 years ago, you see, yeah, 3-4 years ago, it was $42 a share, double where it is right now. And that was pretty much the norm. And the valuations worked at $42 a share. So I'm not saying it's going to $42 a share this year or anytime soon. But nonetheless, it's got room to run. And based on what is going on, aside from the geopolitical risk, yeah, we have underinvested dramatically in large projects. We just don't have any kind of large projects, things like oil tankers, deep sea production, which we don't need. That's why we haven't started any. Canadian oil sands have all but stopped. So, you know, I think that we don't have a supply issue. We're not going to have a supply issue for a long time. Middle East distilled products. Demand is off the charts right now. So they have more and more demand. We've been hearing about the Middle East allowing women to drive. That's going to increase car sales dramatically. It's going to change demand on gasoline and other distilled products. And we're going to continue to see that happen. So I think there's still a lot of upside potential on oil. I still like the stocks that are certainly on my buy list. I still like them. I like, you know, even Marathon here. Let me just say that these oil stocks that are on my list, they're A rated companies. I remember in 2009, we had 10 companies, I think I'm being generous, that were really solid A to triple A rated companies. We had three that were triple A rated. I remember that. Now, I mean, we've got so many energy companies and big industrial companies that are highly rated. And, you know, some of these oil companies are it. So I still want to stay within the asset allocation model. I don't want to waver from that. Okay, so speaking of asset allocation models, I talked last time about changing asset allocation models. I am reviewing it very carefully. I am going to possibly make some changes in July. That's what I'm looking at right now. I want to see, get a feel for third quarter numbers. That means June 30th, and then we're looking July and see what that might be. So it's not going to be dramatic changes, folks. We're not going to see dramatic changes. Don't worry about it. Don't think, but that we are going to see some changes. I am also adding and changing and switching around some of the things on the asset allocation models that everybody has had some questions about. So we're moving those things around. So it's been a little bit difficult. We've had some issues with the website. By the way, we are looking for a new IT guy. Not because of this website, just because of demand and we don't have enough hours in the day. So we're in the process of doing that. Things are only getting better. The other thing I thought I'd mention, because I don't know how many of you heard it, I don't suspect that all of you on this call right now, I don't know what we're up to. We're up to about 658 people. I don't think all of you were listening to the program at the exact same time this morning, but certainly this morning somebody asked me about something I mentioned, which I should have never mentioned, but I did. I don't know why I mentioned it. I don't know what the context of it was that I mentioned it, but I think I was criticizing managers, you know, mutual fund managers and other managers, if I'm not mistaken. I said, look, you know, so anyway, for a very long time, I've had a group of stocks that are a mock mutual fund, and they are a group of stocks that I use in my institutional accounts that I've managed. Some of them I've managed for 30 years. So I still manage about $180 million in private equity funds, private equity management. Things like I manage an endowment, a very, very large endowment for a Bible college. Been managing it for years. I still manage it. I manage their annuity pool for the same Bible college. I manage an annuity pool for a secular university, a small secular private college that I've managed for many, many years. I manage AFA's annuity pool. I manage, you know, and other things. But I have anywhere from $180 to $200 million under management. I wish I didn't do that. I wish I didn't manage those. I wish I could step away from it. But I'm a little afraid to. It is what keeps me sharp because I'm forced to do some analytical work. And some of those have become very easy because I use this fund of 70 stocks that I have that have done very, very well and have outperformed many equity mutual funds over the years, consistently year in and year out. And somebody called me today, and I have one. I think I mentioned it in the context of a ETF firm that is asking me to do that. There's a partner in that ETF firm that has sworn to me that he has never given out the detail of all that fund. He doesn't know all the detail, but he knows some of it. But nonetheless, he's the one that turned them on to me, and I share my returns on that fund with him and have been for the last 10 years or so. But I don't have any plans on making it public. It is a biblically responsible fund, obviously, but there is a very strong likelihood that I am going to make it available if I can figure out how to do it to our partners. And I'm working on that. I'm thinking about it every day. And I just brought somebody else into the picture that is helping me think through that to see how we could possibly do it and make it work. But so that's something that we'll continue to look at and do. But look, there's no time frame on it. Might not happen for 5 years. Might happen this summer. Who knows? I'm not going to put any time frame on it. I mentioned it. People are already starting to talk about it. And it's not likely to happen anytime soon. You'll know when it happens, I guess, when it happens. So, but I am looking at some other stocks to put on the list. I'm contemplating one or two ETFs. I added three Vanguard funds, one a short-term bond fund, one a mid-term bond fund, and one a long-term bond fund. So you might want to take a look at that. They're all my buy list. They're the kinds of things that are always going to be in my buy list. I'll probably just leave them there permanently. Because they're just places you park money, they're bond funds. But you'll notice in the description of those, I say approximately what their annual dividend payouts are in percentage terms. So you can see, obviously, the short-term bond fund doing a little bit less than the 30-year bond and the midterm bond fund. So you'll see that, and that's primarily it's government. They're all, you know, it's biblically responsible. So I've added those on there recently, but I am stepped up some of the funds that I am looking at right now that I'm going to add to the fund, and I'm excited about that. And so we'll be adding those to the buy, to the broad list, I'm sorry, and you'll see it, obviously, when any of those are added to the buy list. I feel very cautiously optimistic and very, you know, I'm borderline. After the presidential elections, I was just flat out excited. I mean, I was certain that the markets were going to take off. And it was obvious in my voice and what I was saying. So do I have that same excitement? No, because I made the tactical error, I guess, of thinking that Republicans were all going to get on board with Donald Trump now that he's president. Boy, was I wrong. And I'm still wrong about that. You say now, you know, Rubio, he's not running for re-election, so he's taking, you know, shots at Trump. And we're going to start seeing Paul Ryan and others that aren't being reelected. You know, they're all going to come out of the woodwork now. They really despise this guy. You got to remember, these are a bunch of spineless people that are going to ever always have trouble working in the real world, have never worked in the real world, and are going to have trouble working in the real world. It's just the way it is. They can't deal with conflict. They can't deal with confrontational. And they don't have backbone to stand up to anything. They have very, very, very thin skin. And all of this is irritating to them. They loved being a part of the royalty of the Republican Party. That is out the door now. And they're concerned about it. So if I have one worry right now, it's going to be political. It's not going to be anything else. Every worry I have is all political. And, you know, that's just where it is. And it's probably going to stay that way, certainly through November elections. And then it's going to start worrying again as we head into the next presidential election. But we'll see how much people really care about their money, how they care about the future of America, how they care about prosperity for their children and grandchildren. We'll find out. I mean, we'll find out. We'll see how people vote in November. But it is a concern because it can come tumbling down a lot faster than it went up. And I think that people are doing that right now. Corporate America is doing that. They're tapping on their brakes. I think they have the exact same concerns that I have. I've talked to three CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, I'll just say. I don't think they were, you know, the mid-sized companies. And, you know, that's the kind of concerns they have. I was going to a CEO conference this year and was set on going and even had my room reservation and decided not to go. I'm kind of looking back now wishing I would have gone just so I can pick some more brains. But anyway, I'm doing it when I can over the phone. So I do have some concerns, all of them geopolitical kinds of stuff. So we'll have to wait. We'll have to just sit it out for now. But right now, the underlying fundamentals of this economy, in my opinion, are stronger than they have ever been. I'm concerned with what's going to happen in the financial sector. I would stay away from banks. I wouldn't own any banks right now. I have a couple on my list. I wouldn't have them. I wouldn't own them. I wouldn't put them on my list. They deserve to be on the buy list because from a technical perspective, they're buys. I have concerns about what is going on in the banking sector. And when I say I have concerns to some of my colleagues still on Wall Street, not colleagues anymore, but my peers, guys that used to be colleagues, they laugh at me and they say, you're missing out on a huge opportunity. Maybe so, but I'm also giving up an incredible risk that we have. The collapse in a financial system, if there is another one in another time, is going to be far worse than anything we could imagine. Yes, they are better. I would say that they have more strength than they've ever had, banks in general. But they also have more risk than they've ever had. So when everybody says to me, well, you know, capitalization in banks is off the charts good. I mean, it's so good. Yeah, so is their risk. So is what they're taking risk on. They have more derivatives, more credit default swaps, more speculative investments than they've ever had. And yeah, it's paid off for them. But if that comes tumbling down, they're all going to be in big, big trouble. So I would just stay away from those. And I'm probably going to continue to do that. I do have some concerns, as I've said before, and I'm going to stop here. But I do have some concerns about real estate investment trusts. I'm not real high on them. I said that last conference call. I have done some very tedious analytics on a number of real estate investment trusts on my list, on my broad list. And I got to tell you, I don't feel good. I don't feel great. So I'm being very careful. I'm picking and choosing very carefully of which ones we do. I said I was going to stop there. I do have one last thing. I want to take this moment to put a warning out to all of you. And I am praying that you all pay attention and you all listen. The emerging private equity, private real estate investment trust, and private MLPs are by December are going to be off the charts. Every day, more and more coming onto the scene. Some of them sound very good. Some of them maybe are good. But my word of caution and my advice to you is that you save yourself a lot of energy, a lot of time, and a lot of brain drain trying to figure out if you should sit and talk with somebody and go through the presentation of how great everything is. I would tell you that you only have one question you need to ask. Give me the symbol of your stock. Oh, it's not publicly traded. End of story, end of discussion. Just don't even think about it. Yeah, but they're my friend of a friend, and all of his friends are doing this, and they're all making a ton of money. I'm just telling you, I wouldn't do it. It's becoming easier and easier for these companies to pop up and get capitalized. Why? Because it's getting easier and easier to find people that are willing to invest in it. Because everything is so good, they think surely things can even be better. That's how we get in a rising market. So I would just ask you to stay away from them. Don't look at them. Don't think of them. Maybe some of you are in them, and maybe you've been in them for a long time, and maybe you love it. That's fine. Stay in it. Keep it for the rest of your life if you want. Just don't do any more. I mean, I just think it's going to be very, very risky if you do, and I think we'd be wise to stay away from it, and you don't need to take that kind of risk to make money. So with that, I'm going to start to take some questions. And just if you've got some things, I know I've gotten so many emails about things that people want me to do or want me to talk about I would love to hear it, and that'd be edifying for everybody. And you can let me know, you know, what that is, if you like. So we'll start for a little while here. So you guys, as soon as you get in the queue there, I can't. I can see when people start getting in. I don't know what you do. Oh, as a matter of fact, wait a minute, hold on. I just realized something. I just realized, folks, that I can't hear you. I'm going to take one call. Well, no, I better not, because then I'll lose that person out of their order. Let's see here. I know you can hear me because I can see the gauge. Let's see. I'm not sure. Okay, well, let me, I'm going to have to ask you to bear with me here. Sorry. I just realized I wasn't hearing anything. And I'm going to try to call in and see if I can use my phone. I usually do this on my computer. When I do that, I can hear. All right, now. Okay. There you go.
Now I can hear.
Let's see if I can take a question.
Dan?
Yes.
Yes.
What's better? You pick Fidelity or Vanguard?
From a brokerage standpoint?
For a broker, yes.
Fidelity.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm hearing myself back. See if I can get this.
Okay, let me go to the next call, see if I can send it better.
Yeah. Dan?
Yes.
I never sold Chesapeake along the energy line. It's been doing pretty well here. What do you think about that?
Well, that's a $1 million question. Chesapeake, I think it's probably looking like it's going to start recovering a little bit. I think it's probably, right now, from what I can tell, I haven't gone through all, I just looked, glanced, I got all the first quarter numbers, and I didn't go through them totally. I just looked at some critical numbers and didn't get a chance to dig into it, but it's sitting here on my desk and for me to finish. But I think they might have some momentum, and they might be able to move back up. I mean, you know, it's still you know, year to date, they you know, they're doing great, and they have moved up. But everything, so when I look from a financial perspective, they're horrible shape. They would get a failing grade. I mean, they're on a scale of 1 to 5, you know, 1 being the worst you could be, they're a 1. I would say they're below a 1. They're probably a 0. So financially, stability wise, they're on some really rocky ground. But if you're profitable, you're probably not profitable. You just got a little bit of gain, right?
Well, yeah, I'm close to profitable.
You are? Yeah, I mean, I would sell it. If you want to be, not now, but I would ride it out maybe another few weeks, see if they continue to go up. If you turn profitable, I would sell it and move into something more stable. You can stay in that gas if you want, but I'd probably move into one that's a little bit more stable.
Okay, thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Let me see here. Yes.
Brother Dan,
yes.
I'm an income investor, and on your utilities, on PPL?
Yes.
The question is, as this, I've lost about, I don't know, 20-some percent in it. Is it okay to buy while they're down here now in anticipation that that PPL is going to recover back up?
You mean buy some more here? Yeah, dollar cost
right.
Dan? Yes.
Right.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, it's okay here. I think that there may be, you know, another chance to do it again. I don't know if you want to, but if you are down that much in it, yeah, I would definitely dollar cost average here.
Okay.
I think this is a good place to do it.
Okay, because the income is still going.
Yeah, the income's not going to change. The income is good.
Right.
It's going to stay good. Let me explain to everybody. I'm glad you brought this up. Let me just share with everybody. So when the markets are doing well, and there's a lot of enthusiasm about the markets and about the economy for that matter, there's a couple things that are always going to suffer. Utilities is one of them. Preferreds is another one. Maybe real estate investment trust, but things have to get, probably not. But utilities, preferred stocks, and bonds are going to suffer because people are leaving. Now, I don't know if you remember, I don't know, you probably weren't in it then, but 2 years ago, utility stocks were ridiculous. I mean, they were up. PP&L, you know, was, I don't know, up maybe 19-20%. And still were some of the others, which is so unlike any utility ever. It should have never happened, but it did. And, you know, so they're coming off an irrational high to begin with, and that's a problem. But the reason for that is everybody was concerned. And they look at utilities as a flight to safety because they say, look, people are always going to need energy. They're all going to have to pay their electric bill. And utilities are very consistent about paying dividends. So I can pay it. I can sit there, park my money, and get paid to wait for things to change. And that's what was happening with utility stocks. And they were all going up. We have just the opposite right now. So I'm not concerned about this downtick. I think they're going to level off, find a good, stable place to be. And the income, you're in it for the income. So I think you'll be in great shape, you know, income-wise. That's not going to change.
Good. Okay, thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Yeah, that was a good question and not no reason to be concerned, that is for sure. Yes.
Hello.
Anybody there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Dan, I fired my financial advisor, and I am disabled, and I'm living off of this income. And he had me heavy in bonds, mostly for the income. And that's why I fired him, because I thought he was too heavy in bonds. But is there a good exit strategy for bonds?
Yeah, are there, do you know if you were in individual bonds or bond mutual funds?
I have a couple bond stocks, like diversified stocks, like LQ's ticks, but most of them are municipal and IG bonds.
Okay. There's no real good exit strategy. I mean, you know, bonds are individual bonds, municipal bonds or any other bond, not bond mutual funds, but bonds are designed for income. They're not designed for growth, because the idea is that you should have, that you're buying those for income, you're getting the income, and it doesn't matter what they do from a value perspective. You know, obviously you're getting your statement, you see it going down and going down. But it doesn't matter, because someday they're going to mature, those bonds are going to mature, and when they mature, you're going to get your money back. You know, you're going to get, it doesn't matter what it's valued the day before it matures. Because when it matures, you're going to get the par value. I don't know what kind of bonds you have and what the par value is, but you're going to get par value for it. So, you know, there, and I say this often about preferreds. So I would say to you, if you're in it for income, you're still getting the income. And if you're in it for income, I wouldn't exit. I don't know that there's any reason to exit. Yes, it looks as though on your statement you have less money, because you do. The value of these bonds have gone down. But, you know, someday they'll be either called or they're going to mature, and, you know, you'll get your at least par value. I don't know whether you paid over par or under par or what for it, but, you know, you'll be better off. And one of the hardest things is, and I try to tell people this all the time, if you're an income investor, man, you've got to really be disciplined. It takes more discipline to be an income investor than it does a stock investor, because if you're going to be an income investor, you got to first of all really believe and really be an income investor. You got to, in other words, you've got to really say, I need this income, and that's why I'm doing it. And you don't care about anything else. You don't care. The value's going down. I don't care. I put $50,000 in, and now it's $25,000. I don't care. I'm still getting my income. Because the only way I'm going to lose money is if I sell. And as long as I hold, I don't care. I'm getting income based on how many shares I have. I still got the shares. It isn't changing. I'm keeping them. You know, and that, you know, that's how you have to be, and it's a very hard thing to do, because you get your statement every month and you say, holy mackerel, I've done nothing but lose money. Well, no, you haven't. You're getting income, right? That's why you did it. You're still getting your income. So, yeah, I mean, you've lost money on paper, but you're still getting the income. So there isn't a good exit strategy. There's nothing you can do, because when you exit a bond that is down, you're basically saying, all right, I'm going to take this paper loss that I have, and I'm going to make it a real loss in my pocket. So now you're selling, and you know you're going to have less money than you started with. So if you started with a $50,000 portfolio and you sell for $25,000, now you got to try to make $25,000 work for you instead of $50,000, and that $25,000 is never going to be able to produce the same amount of income that your original investment did. So you're actually, now you've lost money and you're going to have less income. So I know it sounds a little complicated, but if you're in it for the income, I wouldn't be thinking about selling. I really wouldn't.
Right. You said exactly what I thought you was going to say, but yep. I just wanted to hear it.
Okay. Well, I think you're in a probably a pretty good portfolio. You've got tax-free income with those municipals, so that's good. And I think you just, man, stick it out. I know it's hard, but one way you can stick it out is don't look at your statement anymore. Just throw it in a drawer in the envelope. Don't even look at it. Put it in a box. I mean, that's one way to deal with it, and just collect the income check, you know. So I would hang in there. I'd hang in there.
Appreciate it, Dan.
You're welcome. Yep. Yes, sir.
Hey, Dan.
Hey.
Just a question about Caesarstone.
Yes.
You done any research on those guys, or you?
I have.
I've been trying to track them a little bit, and they're kind of down a lot, but it seems like they may have bottomed.
Yeah, it seems like that. So I had a conference call with the owners. I call them the owners, but I will just say with the majority of stockholders, the ones that started this whole thing over in Israel. And I had a conference call scheduled with them last week on Thursday. And they wanted to have the conference call, but their CFO, something came up and he couldn't be there. So I said, no, I'd rather not. I'd rather wait till all of you are there. I don't want to do that. And the only reason I didn't want to do that is because I know what they do. They say, oh, boy, you know, that's a question he's going to have to answer, you know. And I mean, it's generally intentional that somebody's missing because they always have a legitimate out. So I know because I can remember the days I used to do that. So, but it is, what happened. So I canceled, but I do have a conference call scheduled with them on Tuesday, next Tuesday, a week from today. So, and I told them, look, everybody's got to be there. You know, I gotta know. So they asked if I would be okay if there are several other callers like me on the conference call. I said, no, I don't care. That's fine with me. I'm okay with that. So they're inviting some other people. So I suspect that we'll have this call. So I don't know. I am. I saw their numbers. I went through everything. They are financially, they're doing fine. No real issue there. I think their issue is they're not going to get the kind of business that they thought they were going to get. And they haven't. They did last year, and they're not going to get it this year. And I think they. What's that?
Was it China that's given them a lot of competition?
No, I don't even think it's competition. More, I mean, China is giving them some competition, but I don't even. You know, they have a double whammy. So if you're in Europe, and you're going to buy from China, or you're going to buy from an Israeli company, you're buying from China.
Yeah.
It's more politically correct to buy from a communist nation than it is to buy from the Jews. That's sad to say, but it's true. There's a lot of that here in America as well. So their competition, there is some competition in that regard. And I think Europe, that has hurt them a little bit. But I think the biggest problem was that they grossly underestimated their – I don't know if you know anything about this. I would – if I built a home like I did our – when we did our studio, I'd have no other tops in my home.
Right.
The stuff is literally indestructible.
Mm-hmm.
It is indestructible. You can put a red-hot pan on top of it. It is indestructible, and it's got some incredible commercial uses. But they built this plant. They buy this land in Savannah, Georgia. They build a plant, a distribution center, because Savannah's got pretty decent ports. They were going to be shipping directly to Savannah for all of their U.S. distribution. That was their goal. So they built this good idea. It was very exciting. The stock did well on it, and nothing happening because the product isn't selling. It's just, it hasn't caught on yet. I mean, you can go to a new high-rise building in New York City, and every windowsill in the high-rise will be this stone from them. You know, I mean, so there are certain areas where it is caught on, and it is, you know, it's really big in commercial uses. So I think they grossly underestimated the marketing of this, and their stock when it was issued, the IPO when it was issued, was grossly, you know, overvalued. And I think now it's coming back in line, and I think what you have here is a $30 stock, $35 stock. And they're still, you know, they just, I mean, that's what it is. It's a $35 stock at best. So we're going to see a rebalancing going on. I don't have any problems about the company going under. I like the company. I've been there. I spent time going through the plant. I've met everybody in the kibbutz that runs this in Israel, that has started this, the families that have come together, started this business from nothing many, many years ago. I mean, it's an amazing enterprise, and yeah. I love what it's doing for the nation of Israel. But if I don't think it's going to have upside potential in the next 5 or 6 years, I'm going to sell it. I'm going to put a sell order in on it. And unfortunately, some of us are going to be taking a loss. But or we just hang on to it. I mean, it's not going to be a mandatory sell. Or we just hold it forever.
If you think it's $35 stock, it's about half that now. So it's a pretty good bargain.
Right. Yeah. I'm talking about from a financials. As I look at their financials,
right.
It's a $30 to $35 stock. And it never was. It never was a $71 stock. That's where it went. I don't know if you know that.
Right.
But this thing was a $71 stock at the time. And finally, everybody caught on and sold it. I mean, within a month, everybody dumped it when it hit 71. And it went down. I don't remember what it went down to. But I want to say it went down to like $40. But
there was
it's...
Yeah. I was just on a tour of Israel, just got back last month, and our tour bus drove right by Caesarstone.
Oh, did it? Oh, really? Yeah.
And I said, hey, everybody, look at Caesarstone. And they looked at me like I'd grown another head.
Like, yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty amazing place. And, you know, I don't know if you know what a kibbutz is, but.
Yeah,
we've
passed by several kibbutzes.
Yeah. I mean, that's what built Israel. I mean, the kibbutz was a commune, basically, and they were started usually by one family, and they would invite other families in, and that kibbutz would adopt a particular thing, whether it was growing bananas or, you know, produce or building things or whatever it was, and some of those enterprises grew into multinational companies. I mean, they're amazing. Yet they still operate like a kibbutz. They're still
right.
All, you know, the family runs it, the families. They still live there. They live at the plant. They live in the kibbutz. I mean, it's amazing. So that's what that was born out of. It's a I don't know, 50-year-old kibbutz. And
right.
So... Anyway, so I'm waiting. So Tuesday I have a conference call, and I ask a lot of hard questions that will annoy them, and they'll give me annoying answers, and we'll go back and forth a little bit, and I'll try to formulate some opinions. So,
okay.
I'll give you some ideas.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you. Let's see. Let me go to where is the next button? Okay. Yes.
Dan, what do you think the future of what do you think the future of ETP is?
ETP a lot potentially going for them, but there's a lot of ifs in there. Yeah. Are you owning it because of the income, or is that just?
Well, I took a larger position than I normally would because I was speculating. So half of it is speculating, and the other half I'm keeping for income.
Well, here's what I think. I think that from here on in, from this point today, I think they're going to do better. I think they're going to outperform from here. I think they're getting stronger in what they're doing with liquefied natural gas. Liquefied natural gas is doing much, much better. That's helping them a great deal because that's really what they do well. So I think that they're going to continue to grow stronger. You know, they have a retail side of things with stores and propane and natural gas and liquefied natural gas. I'm trying to find my mute button. I'm going to have to mute you for a little bit here because I'm getting so much feedback. But if you have a question, you can press *6, I think, and unmute yourself. So I feel like they're going to outperform for the rest of the year. I think they're going to get better. This is not I haven't looked at a chart in a long time, but if you were to look at a chart of them, you would think, holy mackerel, what is going on? This is the energy sector. When the energy sector is doing so well, what are these guys doing? You know, but I think from here on in, and I said this a couple of weeks ago, they're going to do better. And I don't know what they are. I know they're up for the month. I don't know for the month of May. I don't know how much, but I know they're up, you know, 4 or 5, 6%, somewhere in that neighborhood for the month. So I think their recovery has already started. They're up 10% on the year, and I think they're going to do better from here. And now I do think that as they begin to come along, they're going to probably cut their dividend. So I don't know that their dividend is going to stay as high as it is right now. So that's why I asked if you were in it for income, because I don't think they're going to cut it dramatically, but I would suspect that if I'm right and they continue to recover, I think they'll probably cut 10 cents, 15 cents off their dividend, maybe more, maybe even 20 cents. I think it's ridiculous, and I'm glad, but I think it's ridiculous that they're paying 56 cents for their dividend. I would rather, and I remember saying this about PAA a long time ago. They would serve their stockholders better if they got their dividend around 5% a year and put that money back into strengthening the company. So I would suspect they're going to cut their dividends, and that's why I asked you if you were in it for income. But it's not something I would sell. Is it something that I would add to here? Boy, if I were a speculator and had a long-term time horizon, yeah, I'd probably dollar cost average right here.
Wow. I almost dollar cost average when it was down at 16.
Did you?
Wish I had.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, I would consider it. I mean, they're, again, I don't know what they're up. I'll see if I can get a chart up. I don't know where they are for the year. Come on. So they're up 9.8%. They're up 9.8% for the year. So, you know, they've had a good run up. Well, I didn't think they were up that much, but yeah. So yeah, I would if you're well above, I mean, if you're in at like $24 or something, I wouldn't dollar cost average in. But if you're in at, you know, I don't know, $30, I would definitely dollar cost average. Yeah.
No, I'm in at 19.25.
Oh no, I wouldn't do anything there. Yeah, you wouldn't. I wouldn't buy anything, obviously. But.
No, it's I'm a little bit overweighted in that sector right now, so I could not sell some others and do it, and it's just not worth it.
Well, you might even be profitable then, right?
Like I am profitable. You have a profit. Yes.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think it's got upside. I think it's going to continue to see good things from here.
Good. Wonderful. That's I looked at all the projects they had, and I could see why they had a lot of risk and people would shy away from it. But the projects are getting completed, and I'm thinking they've got to be contributing more to the bottom line.
Yep. So, yeah, and they bought out a Philadelphia company that I knew really well, and when they bought that company out, it was a company that, I mean, I knew everybody in that company. And I felt really good for it. I thought it was a really good strategic move for them, and it really was. It really was. It's really paid off for them well. And they're not a small company to be this.
No,
I mean, they're a mid-sized company. They're probably worth $40 billion, give or take. So, yeah. Good.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Dan. God bless you, brother. And keep on.
I am. I'm not going anywhere until the Lord grabs him by the throat and says enough is enough. So keep plugging away. Yep.
All righty.
All right. Thanks. I appreciate it. Yes, sir. God bless. Also, I was just thinking when he was saying that, you know, our retreat's coming up, and I know there's a lot of people listening that were at our last retreat. Well, this retreat's going to even be better if it can be. I don't know. It's going to be hard to beat that. But since we have the same speakers, same worship leader, it's got to be as good. It's going to be great. We're going to be in Dallas. So we're going to be at the Dallas Texan Opryland or Opryland Texas Hotel there in Dallas at the end of April, first 2 days of March. So, May. So put it on your calendar. We'll have information on the website soon. Yes, sir.
Yes, Dan, I've been listening to your comments with regards to your concerns on REITs. I tried to shoot you a message via YouTube some time ago. I think we kind of got off on a tangent with regards to the answer. So I thought since you brought it up on this call, I'd ask you again. I've been drawn to some information with regards to a different kind of REIT, which is called an institutionally managed REIT. This is a REIT that comes out of the Blue Rock funds, and there are four different listings for those funds on the stock exchange. Apparently, the idea behind this institutionally managed REIT is that there's much less volatility. The returns are respectable, and there's no load to get in on this thing. And apparently they do the management of it. They split up the management of it between a number of the big houses, Morgan Stanley, Blackstone, UBS, et cetera. So I wanted to see what you thought about this concept, because you hadn't heard about it when you tried to answer last time on YouTube. And I thought I'd just ask you, given your concerns about REITs and what you've already said about the private REITs, what do you know about this institutionally managed REIT concept, and is it something that's worth getting a little bit more information on?
It's not a new concept by any stretch of the imagination. Institutionally managed REITs have been around a long, long time. They started out primarily in the private sector, and then private equity firms got a hold of them, and then hedge funds got a hold of them. Now we're seeing companies like BlackRock and Blackstone and others getting a hold of them. So J.P. Morgan has a number of institutionally managed REITs. So it's not a new concept by any stretch of the imagination, been around a long time. And, you know, I look, as someone that is not a huge fan of REITs to begin with, and as I've said many times, and I've said it, I know, on the conference call, it was a huge step for me out of the box to get to even start offering some REITs on my list. So, but I can't comment. I mean, I can comment on the concept. I mean, the concept is it's a fund of funds. It's a mutual fund that is institutionally managed, and everything in it is a real estate investment trust that is managed. The trust itself is managed by the same institution. And I don't know of any that are biblically responsible. I suspect there may be a couple. I don't know. I haven't looked at all of them because it's not a concept that I'm fond of. But sounds like you've done a little research on it. So I don't recommend them. I'd never have any on my list or anything like that. But I'd have to leave it to you as to what you think. I mean, I don't, if they're not biblically responsible, so that's one reason I wouldn't manage them. The idea that they're safer, I think, is a misnomer, because the private equity firms and the hedge funds that own these things, it's probably one of the first things they'll dump when things go wrong. It traditionally has been, and it will be again, and that tends to hurt these funds dramatically. The other side of it is they're getting all the benefit of the income, not you, and that's always irritated me. So they've got average income on these REITs coming in anywhere from 8 to 11%, and they're passing on 5.5%, and people are happy, and they're pocketing the rest of it. So they're very, very lucrative for the holder, for the manager. So anyway,
well, then looking at your the REITs,
I'm sorry, go again.
Okay, hang on.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry. With regards to the REITs that you have on your list, my particular age group, you have, I think it's almost about a 7 or 8% of the portfolio should be in these financial REITs. Should we, as a general rule of thumb, according to what you've said in the past, should folks in my category pretty much stay away from the small caps and stick with the large and the mid cap, even as represented here with REIT? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Always.
Okay. Very good. Hey, you're going to be coming down my neck of the woods here next week, and I hope I can stop in and see you.
Yeah, you know what? I may be doing a town hall meeting Thursday night down there. I'm trying to get the room. They haven't confirmed with me yet, but I'll talk about it tomorrow on the air and let you all know. But, so I'm going to have like a little Q&A town hall meeting. We're talking about the Woodlands in Texas, folks.
Yes.
So we're going to be there. I'm going to be there for the homeschooling convention I'm speaking. And then that same hotel, we're going to get a room on Thursday night and have a town hall meeting. So hopefully maybe a couple hundred people will be able to get out, and we'll have a nice laid back kind of town hall meeting. It'll be good. It'll be a lot of fun. So I'll let you know. Keep listening. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Yes.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I'm calling because you told us to take profits over 9% for the year until you stated otherwise.
Correct.
And that's what I've been following. But I hear sometimes, like when I'm listening to the program, you might tell someone, hold it instead. How would I determine when to hold it and when to take the profit?
Generally, I'm saying that because of somebody's circumstances that they've just told me about. And, I said earlier in the year that I think everybody over, double digits, over 9%, ought to be taking their profit off the table. Today, for instance, I think it was today, today I said to somebody, he was talking about the energy stocks, and that he had already taken profit. Maybe it was yesterday, already taken profit twice. Oh, it was a woman yesterday. She had already taken profits twice on the stock, and she, she still had some, and she wanted to know whether to take profits again. I told her no, because I want you to keep some money to work in the stock.
Okay.
So, and that was why I told her that. Today, there was somebody else that called, the same situation. and asked me about taking the profits. He had already taken once and taking the profits on the energy stock that was still up. And I said, no, I'd probably leave it alone right now and ride it out. So, look, I want everybody, I would love everybody to get the profits, everybody at least over 60, over 55, to take the profits and get some of it off the table. It really depends. But here's the thing, and I've said this before, I had this rule this year, the strategy change. You can never, ever go wrong by taking profits.
Okay.
And the only way you can go wrong is perceived in your mind, because you look back at the stock and say, oh my gosh, I should have held it. I would have made 10% more. If you're that kind of person, then don't ever take profits, because you're never going to be happy. But, you know, I tell people all the time, I took profits on Valero Energy, man, it was 2 months ago. I was up 40%. I'd be up over 100% right now. I don't care. I got 40%. I'm happy as can be. So I'm not the kind of person. I never look back. You know, I always look at the good that's in front of me. If I decide to take it, then I'm happy. So you can't go wrong, in my opinion, taking profits. So it's never a bad thing to take profits. And but once you take it twice out of a stock, and you're down to, you only have 20 shares. I'm just making up numbers. I would keep it because, you know, you want to keep that. It's a good company, and you want to keep it in your portfolio.
That helps a lot, because I was taking profit and then taking profit again, and then I'm like, should I be holding it the rest of it or not? So that explains it to me. And then I just want to say, I have been telling a lot of people about you. You have helped me tremendously. I've learned a great deal of information from you that I have been trying to get from a lot of people in the past. And I'm going to say this real quick, because I know there's other people on the line. I actually prayed for God to send me someone who could teach me and explain, and he actually had me turn the TV on to a channel I never watched, and it was you. And I've stuck with you the whole time, and I've been telling everybody about you. I've went through my whole family, friends, and even my clients, telling them about you. So I just want to say thank you.
Well, that is awesome. Well, you've made my day, and thank you so much for that. That's so encouraging. And, you know, I hear stories like that all the time, and it is of God, and I'm glad that you took note of that and noticed that. And I pray and hope that that's exactly what you just said. I pray that's exactly why God has me doing what I'm doing, because, you know, it's so hard to get a godly opinion without an agenda. You know,
right.
Everybody's trying to push you in a direction that's benefiting them. And it's so hard to get, and I'm so glad that God has allowed me to use the gifts that he's given me, as much as I don't like the gifts sometimes and whine and complain to God about it. But nonetheless, I can think of 1,000 other gifts I think I'd rather have. But, you know, it is a blessing to hear that. So thank you so, so much. I really appreciate that.
All right. God bless you, your staff, and your wife.
Yes. God love her. Tomorrow's her birthday. So say a prayer for her.
Well, happy birthday. Yep.
Thank you. Tomorrow, I always tell her, is the day that the job that God was knitting together for a guy like me all came together and happened. So, yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you for that.
All right.
God bless. Yes.
Yes, sir, Dan. Okay, so I'm still pretty new at this. I'm 57, and I know I'm not balanced correctly, but you may have answered my question just with the last call mainly, but I'll run it at you anyway, kind of. So I don't want to sound greedy, But you want to be wise. And Micron, you know how crazy good it's been. And it's still being crazy good today and everything. And so, you know, talking about Roth, and my wife and I own about 800 shares a piece of it. I've sold one time back when, you know, and probably pulled $20,000 in profit out of it. Still have these 1,600 shares total. You read stuff. Other stuff, other people, you can't help reading a little bit, but I don't get to listen to the radio that much and listen to you, but everybody think that thing's still got lots of potential, and I don't want to sound greedy, but I'm trying to decide. It's crazy up, as you know, and, I mean, I guess the last question from the last, caller, a man, it'd be stupid not to sell some of that stuff now, correct?
Yeah, I would say you gotta sell, take some of that profit. I'll tell you, I know I don't want to over, I don't want to, you know, sound, get crazy here, but Micron was a gift of God. I can say that it was. I have about four times. One was a sell order on a particular stock that I did many, many years ago. And, you know, it was probably $3 or $4 million worth of the stock in that one stock, not for me personally, but for the accounts that I had managed. And I think of all the people that I blessed by that sell order. And then there was a buy order, a couple buy orders that were just huge blessings for people. And this is one of those. This is one of those things that I can't even begin. I don't want to go into the circumstances of what happened to put this on my list, but because it's crazy. But this came to me, and it was a rare time in the life of this stock. And we got it on the list. And this stock has enormous potential. I mean, it based on what has happened, and I know that it was one of those times. Like I said, it's only been four or five times in 32 years. But this was one of those stocks that I feel like God has given me a gift to give to everybody that's listening. I don't know. I'm a little concerned about the, it's up. I don't even know what it's up year to date. It's up $45. There it is, 45% year to date. So this is up almost 50%, and yes, it's got to have room to run. The valuation on this thing is ridiculous. It's so undervalued. Here it sits at $60 a share, and it's undervalued, and it's still undervalued. So, but if I owned, an exorbitant amount, I have some of it, but if, you know, you have 1,600 shares, it's almost crazy. Not, you could probably be at a place where you could sell half of it and have all of your cost bases out plus some.
Have all
and
of what out?
Your what you paid for it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I would, I think you ought to sell a little bit of it. But if you've got 20 years and you don't care and you're just going to let it go, then let it go. But I would take some profit, definitely.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir.
You're welcome. Let's see. I'm going to take two more calls. Who's on deck here? Nobody? There you go.
Dan, this is Joe in Virginia.
Hi, Joe.
About Caterpillar. The former Louisiana Attorney General is investigating the officers and directors. Should that be a concern?
Yeah, it should be a little bit. The first thing that I've tried to find out is the CFO, is there an issue with the CFO and reporting? And I can't seem to get that. I don't think that is the case. I think it's going to have a lot to do with China and what is going on with some of their profiting and some of their repatriation of some of the monies they made in China. More than 50% of their profit has come in over China. And I have a sneaky suspicion that it was mishandled. So, but I don't know that. I don't know that for a fact. But from what I can gather from one person that's kind of inside a little bit close to this, is that this could end up being a, you know, nothing more than a $30 or $40 million fine. I know that sounds like a lot, but it really isn't. Something like a $30 or $40 million fine for Caterpillar, but we're not sure of the details of it yet. So I'm not too overly concerned about it. You know, we're going to have to wait it out. We're not going to know any real any big information because so much of it does not have to be you know, does not have to be put out there. But all I can say is Caterpillar is up dramatically over the last, you know, I don't know, 3 years. And if you're one of those that had rode it up over the last 3 years, I'd sell it.
Okay.
I'm not ready to put a sell order on it, but if I would say if somebody's had this thing for 3 years, I would sell it. Having said that, I sold my Caterpillar when I took it off the buy list and bought some of it back, but I'm probably going to keep it, ride it out through all this.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yes.
Well, hi, Dan. I've got a couple of questions here about two stocks that I bought that are not performing too well. One is Dean's Food, and one is Cooper's Tires. What's your story on those?
Well, Dean Foods, how long have you had that? A couple years? 2 years? I guess.
Well, maybe? I bought it for $14. Now it's about $10.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I would think that, so it had a major jumped, I don't know, $1.50, $2 a share. After their earnings reports came out, their earnings report was better than expected in some of the areas. Did good. My story on Dean Foods is that it's a consumer staple that has just gotten clobbered, like every consumer staple out there. And I think that it's going to continue to struggle the rest of the year. I would not sell it. I would keep it. I may, right here, where it is now, contemplate dollar cost averaging down,
okay,
buying a little bit more. The last 3 months it's been positive for the last 3 months, so it's recovering. So anytime you see a trajectory more than 40 days in the right direction, that's a good thing. In the last 30 days, it's up 17% in the last 7 days. So, you know, I might consider dollar cost averaging right now, that the worst might be over. That's what the stock is telling us. I think there's nothing wrong with the company. Everything's fine.
I guess on Cooper Tires also, I bought it 36, now it's around 30. Is that something it's not moving very much, or is it?
Yeah, no, Cooper's not going to move. But again, that's another one you just got to hang on to. Look, Cooper Tire is a used car market tire. It goes with, you know, if you want to buy the used tire business, the used car business, you would buy Cooper. And you would buy Goodyear tire if you want to buy a new car business, you know, in general, because that's how they work. And Cooper Tire is recovering. I know that. I don't know what they're up this month, but I know they're positive for the month of May. I don't have it in front of me. And I would suspect they're up. Oh, they're up. Here you go. They're up 6% on the year, 7%. 6.5% on the year, more than 6.5% on the year. So they are recovering a little bit. But
and there's one more, please. Let's ConocoPhillips.
Is that what's their future? You probably mentioned those people, but I didn't hear.
Oh yeah, ConocoPhillips is just. I mean, you don't do anything with ConocoPhillips. I don't know when you bought, but yeah, I mean that's a company you want to keep for. You want to keep ConocoPhillips for the rest of your life. That's just a good solid.
I think at this point, I'm right at the break-even point. I mean, I haven't made a lot of profit, but it's not losing anything for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, that's just had an unbelievable run. It's up 30% this year. It's really, for the month, it's up almost 10% right now. And for the last 6 months, it's up 45%. So ConocoPhillips has been on a tear. You bought it at one of those days when it was up. But all those stocks are long-term holds, 8 to 10 years. I don't think you've had any of them 8 to 10 years or you'd be profitable because I know the companies.
Okay.
But
the main one I was interested in was Dean Foods because those guys they were just bombing out, you know. Like
yeah, and it's killing me because I have a lot of it personally. My IRA, I got a ton of it. So, I don't really care. I'm not really that worried about it. I'm holding it. It's, you know, but I have a couple consumer cyclical staples that are getting hot. You know, I don't know if you heard the call, but I don't know if you heard what I said about utility stocks. Consumer staples are the same category.
Okay.
They're the stocks everybody runs to when they're scared. So everybody runs out of them when they're excited about the market. And that's why consumer staples are down all across the board because they're defensive stocks. They're the stocks that people run to when, because they're the considered the steady kind of plug along companies because look, everybody needs, that's why they're called staples. Everybody buys that stuff. And so when markets are bad, they tend to plug along and do okay because nothing changes for them. People still buy them. And the only reason they're down is not because people stop buying, they still buy, but because traders start selling it because they want to get in things that are more aggressive and have more opportunity for growth. And that's what Dean Foods is just a victim of that. Right now.
Okay. Well, I'll let you go, but it seemed like I heard the problem. Well, this is my understanding. Dean Foods sells lots of milk products.
Yes.
The farmers have gone into consolidating their milk, producing, making their own little business or something. And
yeah. I mean, the dairy, they're a big, big dairy farm, and I talk about it all the time. So that's maybe where you heard it, but it's the milk that's killing them. Dairy prices have been just absolutely pathetic for 2 years, and it's catching up with them. But their brand is primarily ice cream, dairy creamers, some cultured other dairy products, milk itself. So that's hurt them. These prices have really hurt them. So that's another reason.
Okay, well, I'll get off the phone, Dan. I really appreciate your help and service on this, and have a good day.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, we'll take one more. Here we go. Last one.
Yes, Dan. This is Red.
Yes.
Lately, PPL has gone down. Someone asked about it a while ago. And someone said it's because they've issued a lot more stock. Whenever one issues a lot of stock like that, how does that not dilute the shares? And how does it affect the rest of shareholders?
Well, if there's a lot of stocks being sold and the shares are diluted, then the stock goes down because the stock loses value, right? So if it's diluted, there's more shares for the same amount of net worth.
Right. Well, how does a company get away with offering more shares that does dilute the stock? Why is a company allowed to do that?
Well, any company is allowed to open up their stock to more shareholders. It's very seldom that the companies are issuing more stock. So we hear about companies buying back their own stock, right?
Right.
So companies are able to sell that stock at some point in time. When they sell it, it puts those shares into the marketplace. The reason why they – so it's not a matter of being allowed. It's a matter of – I mean, they can do that any time they want. So the majority shareholder of most companies are the company, particularly utilities. So they buy and sell that, and they had a a big sale, so to speak. You know, they put a lot of it. They sold back a lot of the stock that they had bought in 2013 and 2014, and put it back into the marketplace. So
they didn't create any new stock. They're just selling stock.
Right. Yeah. That's what I wanted to, that's what I was trying to say. Thank you. Yes.
I was thinking they created more. Thank you very much.
No. Yeah, you're welcome.
What's going on with Walmart, if you want to answer that?
What's going on with the stock, you mean?
Yeah,
or, Walmart's spending an awful lot of money, more money than they should be spending in their recent buyout of the European company. I can't think of the name of it that they're spending way too much money for. And it was way overpriced. They were in a bidding war with Amazon, and they were just dead set on not letting Amazon have it. They paid way too much money for it. And people looked at that unfavorably, and so that's why their stock took a dive, because people were selling.
I see. Okay. Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up. I sure appreciate all of you being with us. Thank you for that. I'll get the next conference call for next month set. And thank you so much for your support to the ministry. I'm going to ask you that you would, I know this is annoying and hard, but write an email to the radio station, to the wherever you hear the program. Thank them for airing Financial Issues. I can't even begin to tell you. You know what that does? When you write an email and thank them for having us, they think twice before raising their price next year. I know. That sounds hard, but it's true. They just don't, because they're afraid I'll say, no, I'm not paying, I'm leaving. And they panic. And I'll tell you something, it really is a huge help to the ministry. And I don't know the last time a radio station upped their price on us. And it's because they get so much feedback from the listeners. So that really helps us. So if you think about it in the next few weeks, let your station know that you appreciate hearing Financial Issues, and ask them to add another hour. One of the maybe they play the first two, not the third. Maybe they play the third, not the second, whatever. And you can ask them to do that. That'd be great. Thank you all for being with us. I sure appreciate it. I'm only here because of you, for you. And by the grace of God, I hope I'll stay. And I just want to thank all of you for being with us. It is such a